Right. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going deep on a case from the Florida Supreme Court, and this one is it's a real gem for anyone who's really trying to wrap their heads around property tax law, especially here in the Sunshine State.
Absolutely.
We're talking about Zengel v. Powell, and this case, you know, it's not just about taxes. It really gets at that the constant tension in law between our rights, what we're entitled to, and the exact steps we have to take to actually secure those rights.
Yeah, it's a classic example of substance versus procedure.
Exactly. And for all of you law students out there who are, you know, wading through property law, this one's a must read.
For sure.
All right, so to set the stage a bit, Zengel centers on the Save Our Homes Amendment to the Florida Constitution. Most folks know it as the SOH Amendment.
Right.
And basically is designed to protect homeowners from those, you know, sometimes really dramatic increases in property taxes we see.
It's all about keeping those assessments in check.
Right. So the idea is you've got this cap on how much your assessed value can jump from one year to the next.
Yeah.
Makes it, you know, protects people from getting priced out of their own homes.
Definitely a big deal for Florida homeowners.
But here's the thing. What Zengel v. Powell shows us is that sometimes just being eligible for that SOH protection isn't enough.
Ah, interesting.
Imagine you're a homeowner. You've been in your place for years. You know, you fit the bill for Save Our Homes, but then you find out that that tax cap might not actually apply to you.
So it's not as automatic as it seems.
Right. And that's really the core question that this deep dive is all about. When does that SOH cap actually kick in? What are the real prerequisites?
And Zengel v. Powell, as a Florida Supreme Court decision, you know, it gives us that definitive answer. It really clarifies how the SOH protections actually work in practice.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics here. The case revolves around Robert and Ann Powell, longtime residents of Fort Lauderdale. They'd owned their home there since 1990, so, you know, they were pretty well established.
Sounds like it.
But, and here's a really important detail, they didn't actually file for the homestead exemption until 2001.
Oh, wow. So over a decade after they'd bought the place.
Right. And that little detail ends up becoming super significant. Why do you think that is?
Well, the timing is interesting. I'm guessing something happened in 2001 that made that homestead exemption suddenly very important.
You got it. So in 2001, the Powell's property value skyrockets. I mean, we're talking a jump from $2.3 million to $3.9 million.
Whoa, that's a huge increase.
Yeah, and naturally they figured, hey, we've got this Save Our Homes cap. It should kick in and limit how much our taxes go up.
Makes sense.
But then the property appraiser steps in and says, nope, not so fast. They deny the Powells that SOH cap. And their reason was, well, the Powells didn't have a homestead exemption in the previous year in 2000.
Interesting. So the appraiser is saying it's not just about being eligible for the exemption in the current year. It's about having that exemption formally in place beforehand.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting legally.
Right. Because now we have this clash between, you know, the spirit of the SOH amendment, which is clearly to help homeowners, and the strict procedural requirement.
The Powells, they come back with a pretty compelling argument. They say, look, we met all the requirements for the homestead exemption back in 2000. We just didn't file the paperwork until 2001. Shouldn't that SOH cap still apply retroactively to cover that big jump in value?
That's a good point. They're basically saying, why should a procedural misstep outweigh the fact that we were clearly eligible for the protection?
Right. And this really boils down to a question that pops up all over the place in law. Does eligibility trump a late filing? It's about the weight given to, you know, meeting the criteria versus strictly following the process.
It's a classic legal dilemma for sure.
And as you might expect, this case didn't stop there.
Oh, of course not. It went to court.
Yep. All the way up to the Florida Supreme Court.
Wow. So this wasn't just a local property dispute. This had statewide implications.
Exactly. But first, let's talk about what happened at the trial court level.
Okay. So what did the first judge decide?
Well, the trial court sided with the property appraiser. They basically said that 2001, the year the Powells actually received the exemption, was the base year for applying the SOH cap.
So the court said that big increase from 2000 to 2001 was fair game because the exemption wasn't in place yet.
Right. They really emphasized that formal granting of the exemption as the trigger.
It's interesting how much weight that paperwork carries.
It is, isn't it? But this wasn't the end of the road for the Powells.
Oh, they appealed?
They did. They took the case to the 4th District Court of Appeal, and get this, the 4th DCA actually reversed the trial court's decision.
Really? So they sided with the homeowners?
They did. The appellate court agreed with the Powells that since they were eligible for the exemption in 2000, that SOH cap should have been applied.
So now we have two different courts interpreting the law in two different ways.
Exactly. And this is where the Florida Supreme Court steps in to, you know, settle the debate and make sure everyone in the state is on the same page.
Right. The Supreme Court is like the final word on these kinds of things.
All right. So the big question in front of the Florida Supreme Court, it might seem simple, but it has huge implications for homeowners and for anyone who deals with property taxes. Does the SOH cap apply if a homeowner meets all the requirements for the homestead exemption, but just doesn't get around to filing the application on time?
It's that question we were talking about before, eligibility versus procedure.
And what do they decide?
Drumroll, please.
Well, the Florida Supreme Court came down pretty firmly on the side of procedure. Their decision was that the SOH cap only applies after you've officially been granted that homestead exemption, not just because you might have qualified for it earlier.
So they sided with the property appraiser in the end.
They did. They said that the actual act of receiving the exemption, that's the trigger.
I see. So it's not enough to say, oh, I could have gotten the exemption back then. You have to have actually gone through the process and received it.
Exactly. So let's talk about why they reached that decision. Chief Justice Perriente wrote the majority opinion, and they relied on a few key arguments.
Okay, let's break it down.
First, they look closely at the actual text of the Florida Constitution, specifically Article 7, Section 4C, which lays out the whole SOH amendment.
Right back to the source.
Right. And this section says the property tax cap applies to new homestead property. But then they interpreted that phrase, new homestead property, by looking at it alongside another section of the Constitution, Article 7, Section 6, which talks about how you actually get a homestead exemption.
Ah, so they're connecting the dots between those two sections.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court's interpretation was basically this: within the Constitution, you can't have homestead property for the purpose of triggering the SOH cap until you've officially gotten that homestead exemption through the proper channels.
So it's all tied together. You need that formal recognition from the authority.
Right. And Chief Justice Perriente put it really clearly. She wrote, and I'm quoting here, "The constitutional cap is triggered not by eligibility, but by the grant of the exemption."
That's a pretty definitive statement.
So the specific language of the Constitution, that was a big factor in their decision. But they also considered, you know, the overall goal of the SOH amendment.
Right, because it's not like they were ignoring the intent behind the law.
Exactly. They acknowledged that the whole point of SOH is to, you know, protect Florida homeowners from these huge property tax hikes. But they said that for that protection to actually work, people have to actually follow the rules for applying for and getting the exemption.
So it's like, yes, we want to protect homeowners, but there needs to be a system in place, a process that everyone follows.
And that brings us to, I think, another really important part of their reasoning, the practical side of actually running the property tax system.
Right. The nuts and bolts of making it all work.
Exactly. The Supreme Court pointed out that property appraisers, they need clear records. They need to be able to easily verify who qualifies for the SOH cap. And the formal application for the homestead exemption that provides that essential documentation.
Makes sense. If it was just based on whether someone could have gotten the exemption in the past, it'd be a nightmare to administer.
Yeah, imagine trying to track down all that information going back years.
It would be chaos.
So they need that official record to keep things running smoothly and fairly.
Efficiency and consistency, those are key in any legal system.
Now, were there any other justices who chimed in on this decision?
Yes, there were a couple of concurring opinions.
Oh, right. Concurring, meaning they agreed with the outcome, but maybe had some additional thoughts.
Exactly. So Justice Wells, he agreed that getting the exemption is key, but he also pointed to Florida statute section 193.155.
What's significant about that statute?
Well, he basically said this law is in line with how the Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution and that it makes the requirements for getting the exemption and using the SOH cap even clearer. He really highlighted how the Constitution and the statutes work together to give us guidance.
So it's all part of a cohesive framework. What about Justice Cantero?
Oh, yeah. Justice Cantero had an interesting point, too. He was a bit wary of interpreting the phrase establishment of homestead too loosely.
What was he worried about?
His concern was that if establishment wasn't tied to that formal process of applying for and getting the exemption, it could create a lot of instability in how property taxes are handled across the different counties in Florida. He really wanted to avoid any ambiguity and make sure everyone's playing by the same rules.
So it sounds like there was a lot of agreement among the justices. The majority opinion really had a solid foundation in the Constitution. the intent of the amendment and, you know, the practical realities of the tax system. Now, did anyone disagree? Did we see any dissenting opinions?
Well, the sources we have, they don't lay out a specific dissenting opinion or say which justice dissented, but it's pretty likely there were some pushback.
What kind of arguments would a dissenting opinion have made?
I'd imagine the dissent would have focused on, you know, the fundamental rights angle. They might have said that strictly sticking to the procedure shouldn't outweigh the spirit of the SOH amendment, which is to protect homeowners.
Right. So they'd argue that the Powells clearly met the basic requirements for SOH, and a simple filing mistake shouldn't negate that protection, especially given how much money was at stake.
Exactly. They might have even said something like, look, the court should be more focused on the purpose of the law rather than getting bogged down in technicalities.
That makes sense. It highlights how legal cases often involve balancing different principles.
Yeah.
You know, fairness versus following the rules to the letter.
Yeah, it's rarely black and white.
Okay, so if we're talking takeaways for Florida homeowners, what's the big lesson from Zingel v. Powell?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. If you want that SOH protection, make sure you file for the homestead exemption and you do it on time.
So it's not enough to just meet the requirements, you have to take action.
Right. Owning your home and living there, that's just the first step you have to actually go through that formal process of applying for and getting that exemption. If you don't, well, you could end up facing some pretty hefty tax increases without the protection you thought you had.
And what about for the property appraisers, the folks who actually implement these rules? How does Zingel affect them?
Well, for them, Zingel makes things a lot simpler. They don't have to play detective trying to figure out if someone might have been eligible for the exemption years ago. They just look at the official record. If the exemption's been granted, they apply the SOH cap. If not, they don't.
So it streamlines the whole process, makes it more objective, less room for interpretation or disputes.
Exactly.
Now, zooming out a bit, what does Zingel tell us about how courts handle constitutional amendments, especially ones that were approved by the voters?
I think Zingel shows us that courts are always trying to find that balance between respecting what the voters wanted and making sure the law can actually be implemented effectively.
Right. So they have to consider both the big picture intent and the practical details of how things actually work on the ground.
Exactly. They can't just look at the goal of the amendment. They also have to figure out, okay, how do we make this happen in a way that's fair and consistent?
So if we were to sum up Zingel v. Powell, like a three-part test to determine if you qualify for the SOH cap, what would that look like?
Okay, here's the Zingel test. Part one, you own the property and you live there as your primary residence. Part two, you filed for the homestead exemption on time, following all the rules and deadlines. And part three, and this is the big one, you actually received that official homestead exemption from the authorities. All three boxes have to be checked.
So it's a multi-step process. Just meeting the first requirement isn't enough. Now, for our law students out there, what's the broader takeaway from this case? What does Zingel teach us about the legal system as a whole?
Well, I think for law students, Zingel is a great example of how substantive rights and procedural rules, they go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other.
Right. And it shows that even seemingly small procedural missteps can have big consequences.
Exactly. It's not enough to just know your rights. You have to know how to exercise them properly, how to follow the process.
And Zingel also highlights the role of the courts. You know, they have to interpret the law, figure out what it really means in practice, and they have to do it in a way that's both fair and workable.
Right. They're constantly balancing those competing interests.
So the big takeaway from Zingel v. Powell is this eligibility alone isn't enough. You need to follow the proper procedure to actually get those legal protections and benefits.
And in this case, that means getting that homestead exemption officially granted.
And it leaves us with something to really think about, especially for you future lawyers.
Yeah.
How does that tension between rights and procedure play out in other areas of law? Where else do we see those battles between, you know, the spirit of the law and the letter of the law?
It's a question that comes up all the time, and it's one that you'll be grappling with throughout your legal careers.
Absolutely. Now, if you're interested in diving deeper into this case and all its nuances, we highly recommend checking out the full Zingel v. Powell opinion. Read it alongside the relevant statutes and, you know, really get a feel for how the courts approach these complex issues. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating look at how rights and rules intersect right here in Florida.
And it's a reminder that the legal world is full of these kinds of fascinating puzzles waiting to be solved.
All right, folks. That's a wrap on our deep dive into Zingel v. Powell. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you, Adam.